Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another edition of The Teardown. My name is Jeff Gluck. I'm along with my coworker, Jordan Bianchi. We are motorsports writers for The Athletic, and we have 1 week. This is our last episode before we actually have real racing to talk about on the track. A week from now, we're recording this Sunday, January 29th, and a week from now, we will be together in Los Angeles, California, at the Coliseum. And we will be able to have a real post-race podcast after that. So that would be very fun to talk about the clash there. Jordan didn't get to go last year, so I'm so excited to see what his take is on it and how he views it. And you know, and I'll be able to compare what I thought, you know, last year's race to this year's race and the event and all that stuff. So lots of exciting stuff to talk about. But first, one last sort of off-season episode here. Jordan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm excited for the clash next week. I chose not to go last year, and I was okay with the decision. And then the first activity or whatever, I saw, you know, the social media posts, and I went, man, I merely made a bad choice. Like, why did I not go? And it was a big feeling of missing out. So I'm looking to go. I made the right decision this year to go. Looking forward to it. It's going to be fun. And I think your point, and I've heard this from other people, is like, well, it's going to be interesting to compare year one to year two at the same energy levels there, the same enthusiasm is there. And was last year just kind of lightning in a bottle and a one-off thing? Or is this something that could be something more and it can become a yearly thing? And very curious to see that. It's going to be interesting to see how this unfolds.
Yeah, still a lot of questions in year two.
Yes.
But first, since this is our last off-season one sort of, although we'll have one, you know, in between the Clash and the Daytona 500, but our plan for that is that we might actually do that while we're in Daytona, maybe after media day or something like that, so we can get a little bit more of a Daytona 500 preview, or maybe having after talk to some people instead of dropping an episode for no reason on Super Bowl Sunday. That's our plan for now. So this is our real sort of true last off season one. But we are working on a project. We've teased it a couple times on here, and we're ready to talk about it now because the first edition is coming out Monday, January 30th. We think. That's the plan anyway, tomorrow, as we record this. And it is called, I don't know what our official name is, but I'm sort of calling it the Athletics NASCAR 75 Project. You guys have seen, you know, of course, like in 1998, NASCAR did their 50 greatest drivers list. Now it's the 75th anniversary of NASCAR. You know, you saw the NBA did like NBA 75, where they named the best 75 players in history. So we sought to try and come up with the best 75 Cup Series drivers in NASCAR history. Now, this is not, when you look at NASCAR's list from 1998, Jordan, there's, you know, all sorts of various series. You know, you got the modified type people on there or Xfinity type drivers on there. This is only Cup. So a lot more challenging and a lot more surprising in a way. You know, the names that ended up on this list, I think, are, we didn't see a lot of those coming, I would say. Is that fair?
Very fair. You know, as we started kind of laying the groundwork for this, we went through and I looked at the list that NASCAR put together in 1998, and we kind of used that as a framework, but we decided like we were going to focus on Cup drivers only. So that was the criteria. So you had to start pulling guys off of that list. And as you're looking at this, you're like, okay, well, who's going to slide in? And obviously, since 1998, there's been a lot of big name drivers that have come through that are very worthy, the Hamlins, the Bushes, Johnsons, you know, Earnhardts, et cetera. And you're like, okay, you should fill this up. But then you kind of get to like 65 drivers and you're like, wait a second. Okay, how is this going to work? How do you fill out this list? And you start really thinking like, oh, you know, there's a driver on here that you would never think that would be considered the one of the all-time best in NASCAR and the top 75 drivers of all time. And you're like, no, this driver's actually easily made this list. And that was an interesting observation. And then the other observation, we're going to dive into this kind of throughout this podcast a little bit, is about certain guys and everything, is you look at guys' criteria and you kind of had certain belief about their careers in your head, good or bad. But then when you dive into the numbers, you're like, oh, wait a second. This guy had a really better career than I thought, and much better career than I thought. Conversely, there are some guys whose careers are, depending on how you measure them, and that's going to be something to kind of talk about as well, is you look at their career and you're like, yeah, they did all of this, which is a lot of great stuff, but they also didn't do this. And their career, like, it felt like they were, you know, it felt a little, I don't want to say unfulfilled. That's not the right word. What would be the word? Like, the basket wasn't as full as you thought it would be, maybe. So, yeah, I'll go ahead and say, like, as I kind of put together my list, is I obviously championships, winning multiple championships is really important. Obviously race wins is important, especially in the modern era. I did tend to favor guys who did a lot more in the modern era. Though my number one on my list, we'll get into, is not something in the modern era necessarily, or not the 100%. And I also looked at crown jewel events. Like, I really put a lot of weight on winning crown jewel events. And that was the Southern 500, Daytona 500, the Coca-Cola 600. And obviously you have to be kind of careful how you use this, because it was only for a short period of time, was the Brickyard 400. And I looked at how drivers did in the majors. And those to me are major events, and the best come out in those events. So that's kind of my quick synopsis on this project, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it, you know, playoff formats have changed, race formats have changed, the schedule, how many races people, you know, run in a season has changed. But I think ultimately sort of the best thing you can look at is, you know, championships one thing, but you can't, you know, back in the day, that wasn't a priority for those guys. So wins, you know, is the more common thread throughout the years, even though wins, you know, you could argue in the early days, you know, maybe a midweek race against a smaller field or something. You know, that's a little bit different.
Richard Petty.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that is a thing. It's a consideration. Yeah. And then, yeah, I mean, when you look at, you know, the crown jewels of modern era, I mean, to me, I'm leaning modern era anyway, because I think, okay, look, today you have drivers who started racing when they're 3-4 years old, and they're competing their entire lives and being honed for the, you know, the big time, you know, against similarly talented individuals, and really sort of, you have to be so elite to make it, where, you know, back in the day, I mean, that was the reality of the time, but, you know, somebody's not starting their career in their 20s and, you know, in the 1950s, and just like, oh, I got a car and I'm just going to go run this. And, you know, hey, I think I'm pretty brave and a good driver. I mean, it was just a different skill set required, a different, you know, talent level throughout the field back then, people winning by several laps, because it was so much more about, you know, the reliability of the car and at times. So, you know, it's hard to, NASCAR is very difficult to define. I think, you know, the NBA or something would be a lot easier. You look at, okay, points and, you know, like how championships, sure, in the NBA too. But anyway, so the good news is, this project's not just Jordan and I that decided this. We had 24 other people throughout the NASCAR industry who joined us, and I'm going to run through that list real quick. Jordan, just interrupt me if you want to chime in on anybody. But basically what we wanted to do is, first of all, this was kind of a tough one, because, you know, anybody that is in some sort of position, you know, with a team or anything in the industry, or would have worked with one of these drivers, could have a potential bias, right? But we didn't want, and so that's kind of hard to avoid, but we didn't want drivers themselves who are going to be eligible for this list to be in a position to have to vote for them. So none of the top 75 drivers were voted on this list. However, we had, you know, team owners, crew chiefs, and so I'm going to run into that list a little bit here. Now, one more thing before I say the names. We also wanted to have a variety for each of these segments. Like, okay, well, let's get a crew chief, but let's get, you know, current crew chiefs and former crew chiefs. Let's get, you know, current drivers and former drivers, you know, veteran motorsports journalists who don't necessarily cover it on a week-to-week basis anymore. And people like us who are, you know, there and a little bit on the younger side. So here's our list of the 26 voters. It was Jordan, of course. This is, I'm going in alphabetical order. So Jordan, with your B name there, you are first. Congrats.
Makes me feel good.
Yeah. Holly Kane, longtime motorsports journalist.
Esteemed, yeah.
And has been for a variety of outlets, has been covering the sport for a long time. Landon Castle, Tim Fedewa, who was not only, you know, a former driver, but is also current spotter for Kevin Harvick. Chris Gabehart, who is Denny Hamlin's crew chief. Myself, Eddie Gossage, obviously the former Texas Motor Speedway track president. Alan Gustafson, who, you know, yes, he's the crew chief for Chase Elliott right now, but don't forget, he's also worked with Jeff Gordon, Kyle Busch, Mark Martin. So, you know, someone who we felt like could weigh in on a variety of eras. Jeff Hammond, obviously known more recently for, you know, analyst role and things like that, and being part of the media, but also was longtime crew chief for Darrell Waltrip. Mike Hembree, who is one of the more esteemed NASCAR journalists currently with NBC. And he's someone who I've talked to for years. I used to work with him in NASCAR scene, and we've talked for years about, you know, the best drivers and all that stuff. And I thought he would be great to weigh in. Tom Jensen, also a former journalist who is currently working for the NASCAR Hall of Fame as their curatorial affairs manager. Mike Joy. You all know Mike Joy, not only the longtime broadcaster, but quite the historian of NASCAR, really, and someone who is integral to helping the Hall of Fame selection process every year. Parker Kligerman, Corey LaJoy, obviously two more current, younger drivers. What's their perspective on the history there? Dustin Long, also of NBC Sports journalist. Ben May, the Pocono Raceway track president. So you see there, we've got like Eddie Gossage, former track president. We've got a current track president there. Larry McReynolds, who obviously you guys know from NASCAR and Fox, but was you know, a crew chief also for Dale Sr., Davey Allison, Ernie Irvin. NASCAR man RR. What a great, this was, Jordan, you came up with this suggestion, I think. You know,
yep.
I don't even know his real name, but the racing historian on Twitter, he hasn't, I don't think he has doxed himself or anything, but he obviously knows a ton about the history of the sport.
Yes.
And we wanted to have, you know, someone current, sort of a current historian on there. So that was an interesting pick, but I'm glad he's on the panel.
Great addition. Very smart guy. He's got a great sense of the scope of NASCAR. And I know his near name. I don't want to give it away. I don't think he wants me to, so we're not going to, but if you don't follow him on Twitter, please do, because he is a must follow.
We wanted to have some NASCAR representation as well. And we are fortunate to get Steve O'Donnell, the chief operating officer, to be on the panel. Jay Pinnell, who has been a journalist. He's worked for Motorsport Games, and he also is the author of a book called Famous Firsts in the History of NASCAR. And so he's obviously, you know, very knowledgeable about the sport overall. Here's one that could perk some ears up. Roger Penske. Roger Penske is on our panel and voted. And compliments to him. He was one of the first people to get his vote in. He just takes care of business.
So he was like, he immediately responded to the ask, like within minutes. And I was like, all right, he was in. It was like, let's get going. I think he might've been like the first one to say yes, or one of the first.
I mean, it's amazing. Sometimes you're like, man, how do these people get so successful and stuff? And you know, you see how people work and they're like, man, he just responds right away, as much as he has on his plate. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Our friend Nate Ryan, the esteemed NBC sports journalist. Reed Sorensen, obviously another former driver and current spotter. So we wanted to have his perspective of, you know, both the people he raced against and, you know, he sees the whole field now, you know, for the last half dozen or so years being a spotter. Steve Wade, who really is one of the great, living NASCAR journalists, longtime NASCAR scene, worked with him back in the day and wanted to have him on the panel. Kenny Wallace, you guys all know Kenny Wallace, former NASCAR driver. And to round out our alphabetical order list, we have John Wood. We wanted, you know, he not only did, you know, John, obviously he, raced himself, but, he's, you know, working on the team ownership side now. And it, you know, he goes to the meetings, you know, team owners council type stuff. And, you know, we felt like, hey, we're trying to get sort of the, you know, the older type owners, you know, with a, like a Roger Penske, and we have a younger type owner with a John Wood. But obviously, with the Wood brothers' history in the sport, you know, the family is extremely knowledgeable, and John's extremely knowledgeable. So that's our panel. And we had obviously all those people's votes. We, as part of the voting process, we granted them anonymity in terms of their specific voting. So you're not going to be like, oh, well, this is where Steve O'Donnell had, you know, X drivers ranked. They're just their driver, their stuff all went into the average voting. And we're going to release this in a 3-part series. So it's going to be actually a little bit more than that. So we're going to do, you know, the first 25, then the next 25. And then I think we're going to do like maybe 20 or something. And then we might do, you know, separate pieces on the final four as we count down to the big reveal. But Jordan and I are happy to share our votes with you today. And, you know, at least generally, and we're not gonna, I'm not going to go through all 75 of mine, but you can kind of get a sense of what our sort of thinking was, what our debates were. And yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, as I see the votes come in, like, oh, first place votes for certain people, when somebody would agree with me, I'd be like, oh, hey, yeah, okay, great. And then when other people would be, you know, disagree, I'd be like, man, huh, okay. I thought more people might have some consensus. So it's pretty divided, you know, among the top four, really. But generally, I think there's already sort of a consensus among, you know, the top four. It's just the order. You know, when you talk about the NASCAR Mount Rushmore, typically, you know, in some order, you've got, you know, the Petty Pearson type contingent, and then you've got the Earnhardt Sr., Jimmy Johnson type contingent. Jeff Gordon always seems to be right on the fringe of it, but, you know, he can't seem to crack that. You know, when you hear debates on Sirius or something, you know, Jeff Gordon fans always bristle at this, but he doesn't sort of get the GOAT conversation. Why do you think that is?
Because Jimmy surpassed him. I mean, Jimmy came in. Jimmy's first full season was a year after Gordon had won a championship. So Gordon was still very much in his prime. And Jimmy quickly usurped Gordon and became the man. And the numbers speak for themselves. Like, you can talk about the playoff formats and this and that, and, you know, and how it helped Jimmy or whatever. The fact of the matter is those guys raced head-to-head, and Jimmy won more championships. And that's undeniable. He didn't win as many races as Gordon, but he won more championships. He won 5 straight championships. Like, that, you can't argue with. And the fact that they were teammates. So, essentially, in the same equipment, right? It wasn't like one drove for a different manufacturer or this or that. It's like, theoretically, they had the same equipment, and they went out and Jimmy beat them. Like, you can't. And so that is why I think it's pretty clear cut when you think about it, of why Jeff is no longer talked about as the number one driver, or considered the one of the top drivers of all time, at least not in that category, like you were kind of classifying it, because Jimmy's clearly beat him.
Yeah. I mean, when you come into, first of all, I mean, Gordon ends his career with 10 more wins than Jimmy did, but Jimmy ends up with 3 more championships, and in a format that arguably was harder to win because the points are being reset. And then when you go back and you look at like their head to head, there was 515 races they competed head to head. Now, obviously, they're not all in their prime during all those. Like, Jimmy came in, Gordon was already in his prime, and Jimmy had to, you know, Jimmy won quickly, but he sort of had to learn. And then, you know, maybe in Gordon's later years, maybe his performance falls off a little bit. But when you look at their head to head, just in terms of race finishes, not actual wins, Jimmy finished ahead of Jeff 288 times. Jeff finished ahead of Jimmy 227 times. So 61 more times in the races they were at, Jimmy was ahead. And this is a pretty tough one to dispute. I mean, Jimmy during that time gets 76 of his career wins. Gordon only had 35 of his career 93 wins while they were both racing together. Again, same team. And yeah, it's hard to make that argument. Now again, I get why Gordon fans feel differently, but when you look at the numbers, which is
pretty obvious,
you know what you try to do. Yeah, I mean, at least in my view. So
I do think, to talk about this conversation, I do think one of the great what ifs in NASCAR history is if Jeff Gordon hadn't said, hey, we should hire this guy, Jimmy Johnson, how Jeff Gordon's career would have looked differently.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue Jimmy still finds a way and makes it in, but maybe he doesn't make it with Hendrick necessarily. So, but you also could say, well, Hendrick, let's say Jimmy starts his career with somebody else and does find a way in, but then Hendrick, you could say, well, Hendrick could have scooped him up, 5 years into his career or something. So.
I don't know. I mean, at that point, does he pair him with Chad Knaus then? I mean, there's this domino effect, right?
That's true. It's true.
Let's be completely honest. Like Jimmy's resume, when he got hired by Hendrick, and he has spoke about this, it wasn't good. He had never won an Xfinity Series race. Like it wasn't like he was blowing people away and he was like this can't miss talent. But Gordon, to his credit, saw something in him and decided that he was the guy. And it's a fascinating thing. It's one of those great what ifs. And that was the other thing that came out of this was there's like, you start thinking about things and you're like, man, how about like Davey Allison, for example. Like I looked at Davey Allison's career and I was like, man, it was a short career. Like, is it really good? And then you look at the numbers, you're like, darn, man, this guy was really, really good in a short amount of time. And he was just getting into like his prime years. And it's like, what would he have been able to do if he had been able to race longer? And then conversely, and this isn't anything new, and you've heard this before, like Dale Earnhardt, 7 championships, Davey Allison, his career was cut short prematurely. Tim Richmond's career was cut short prematurely. Alan Quickie had just won the title, and then the following year, his career ended, and he was killed. And like, and so would have Earnhardt won 7 titles? Like, I don't know, but it's one of those things you kind of dive into as you're looking at this, and just there's all sorts of, I don't know, what do you call it, butterfly effect or something of that,
No, you're right. I mean, it's fascinating to see because whenever you think about history, if somebody was there or not there, that takes away wins from somebody else, just like you're talking about with Gordon and Jimmy. It's interesting. I mean, I had Davey Allison, for instance, number 32 on my list. You had him number 37. But again, you're judging off what he did. And then you're also like, well, I mean, how much do you sprinkle in the talent level? It was interesting to see. I think some voters looked at like, okay, who are the most talented drivers? Like they gave, some guys with fewer wins, they boost them up because their talent level was amazing. And then some people were like, hey, I'm just judging this more off like the numbers and the purely the championships, things like that, of what they actually did accomplish, which is kind of the direction I went. And, I was surprising to me about how many of the current drivers are pretty high on the list of guys who are still racing, like who made my, say top 20 even. I mean, I have Kyle Larson in my top 20. I have Joey Logano in my top 20.
Yeah.
Keselowski, Denny Hamlin, Harvick, Kyle Busch. I think sometimes you sort of sit back and you go, okay, NASCAR history, like 75 years, so many names. It would just fill up this list. There's so many great names. How could even the modern people, like, you hear this debate sometimes, oh, Denny Hamlin, is he even going to be in the Hall of Fame?
Like first ballot. Like it shouldn't even be a debate.
Yeah. It doesn't matter that he hasn't won a championship. Like I'm telling you, I mean, let's talk about, like some of the surprising things. I don't want to, give away too much because we're only dropping the first part of this segment, but I'll tell you driver number 75 to get this started. And, of who is going to be number 75 when the list comes out tomorrow. And I think people are going to just be like, what? He's one of the top 75 drivers ever. Alex Bowman, your guy. Bowman is the number 75 driver as voted on by our panel in NASCAR history.
But when you look at it and you break down the numbers and you look at the list of guys who've won races at the cup level, like Bowman, it's not even a debate. Honestly, like he belongs on the top 75. He's got 7 career wins, if I have it right.
7 career wins at 7 different racetracks.
Yeah. And he's made the playoffs every year he's been with Hendrick Motorsports.
Right. And all 5 seasons.
So I kind of consider that the start of his career. I know he drove for other teams before at the cup level, but really, that was really the first time he had a chance to do anything. Like, it's not even a debate. Like, that was part of this too, is like, guys, you look at it like, oh, there's no way. And then you're like, oh, yeah, easy. Like, it was like, Okay, easy. You know, Alec Bowman deserves to be on this list. And I will look at this and I'll tell people, like, you tell me who you take off and then we're going to put on. Because I don't think we missed on too many people. When this list comes out, I don't think there's going to be a lot of people who are like, oh, man, that guy deserved a spot. Like, I think it's pretty clear cut a lot of the way.
Yeah, I mean, there's nobody, you know, Bowman with his seven wins, you know, there's nobody below him with this, like, a certain amount of wins, anybody in NASCAR history who didn't make that list. I mean, you know, pretty much if you were in the ballpark of even, you know, a half dozen wins, you were going to be considered for people to put on there. But I think the voters then looked at, you know, some of the more, you know, like, for instance, Ross Chastain got a couple votes to make it into the top 75. Like, and some people had him decently high. And I think they're sort of looking at, like, well, hey, well, you know, what's he, what he did last year and, you know, his talent level maybe, but he also only has two wins. So if you're really judging just his career so far, I'm not saying by the end of this year, if he wins even three more races, he's probably in the top 75. But with only two wins right now, that, you know, that's just not enough to make the all-time 75 based on one great year, sort of, you know what I'm saying? So it's interesting to see how people view it.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
It would. And another what if is if Chastain, who finished second in the championship last year, close, had somehow beaten Logano for the title. Like, all of a sudden, let's say he wins the race, he's going to have three career wins. He's certainly on this list, I would say. And it's curious to see where people rate him.
Well, even if, like, let's say Blaney even would have won the race, and then, like, let's say just Chastain wins the championship and yeah, not the race, and he has two career wins and a championship, I do think people suddenly move him up into their top 75 or enough. Agreed. to make it. So, yeah, it's just kind of interesting to, you know, it's like, this isn't going to, you know, nobody's going to agree with everybody on this list, right? It's subjective. It's your opinion of what makes great drivers and things like that. Neither of us had Ross Chastain in our top 75, but again, some others did. I mean, let's see. He was the highest I see him on this list. Somebody had him at number 61. So, I mean, you know, again, people are like, hey, look, they're looking at different criteria maybe than we do. Very interesting. So we kind of skipped over this, but, we're going at opposite ends of the spectrum here. Who was your number one, and do you want to defend that?
I will. And I'm going to tell you this right now. Like, as soon as I submitted my list, I had regrets. Like, I went through my list afterwards again and I went, oh. And I will tell you, I am still wavering on who I had number one. I voted David Pearson number one. And to me, it was a 1A, 1B situation. Jimmy Johnson was my 1B. I had him number two on my list. I struggled with this a lot. Ultimately, it came down to the fact that I talked to some people and they will tell you that David Pearson, when they watched him race, they thought he was phenomenal. He ran for the championship five full years. He won the championship three full years. He was the one driver of his era who could go toe to toe with Richard Petty. He beat Petty 33 times, the 63 races they finished 1-2. He had David Pearson's winning percentage is third best all time, I believe. And it's at 18.3, which is pretty remarkable. And so David Pearson got my vote for number one. Again, I can make a case for Jimmy, and I kind of have a little bit of buyer's remorse on that. But it was really hard. But ultimately, Pearson was my number one.
So, yeah, like you, I have them 1-2 just in reverse order. I have Jimmy number one. I've been trying to stay consistent on this since he won his seventh title, and I was working for USA Today, and I wrote the next day in the newspaper, Jimmy Johnson's the greatest driver of all time. And I just thought, well, once I say that, you can't really go back.
I said that too.
And forth. So, okay. There you go.
I did feel bad about it. I'm like, oh man, I'm going back. But it's like, it's hard. Like, you go back and look at the numbers and talk to people. I don't know, man. I mean, the thing
with Jimmy is like, you know, the last couple years of his career aside, you look at what he did in that era. I mean, it's pretty competitive now with parity and stuff like that, but it was back then, you know, in the Chase era, you had some huge heavy hitters trying to go at him every year. And he was like defeating somebody different for the title every year. And it was like, okay, he beat Jeff Gordon. He beat, Mark Kenseth. Martin, Kenseth, Tony Stewart,
Carl Edwards.
I mean, yes. And everybody, it wasn't some secret. Like, it wasn't like the first year, like he snuck up on everybody or something, right? Like people knew this guy was good. Okay. He wins one in a row. He wins two in a row. He wins three in a row.
Yeah.
Who's going to stop this guy? Nobody. Four in a row. Come on, somebody, please. Like, let's throw our best stuff at him. Five in a row. Like, in an unbelievably competitive era where it was just, I mean, again, like this wasn't, I mean, the cars had more horsepower. They were harder to drive. You know, this was not, you know, you hear some guys say today, oh, the cars are too easy. There was nobody saying that at the time. That's for sure. and Jimmy beat them all. And he did it in a way that it's sort of, he made it seem easy. He made it look easy. You're like, what is this guy doing? Maybe it's Chad Knaus. But ultimately, the guy is just a goat. I mean, he's just the greatest, I think. Again, when you consider the era that he did it in, and I'm giving extra points for that. And yeah, like Pearson, look, I never saw him race, right? But I talked to people who were around then, you know, like a Mike Hembree.
Yeah, absolutely. Hembree was somebody I talked to. Yep.
And I remember, you know, sitting as a very young journalist with Hembree at the racetracks and him saying, oh, Pearson was, you know, Pearson's the best, you know, and he always felt that way. And I was like, really, Pearson, huh? And you talk to people who were around then and they just feel like his talent was incredible. And he didn't, if he had run as much as Petty, right? Like people feel it would have been differently. Now we're not, you know, you can't say what ifs, right? But he still won 105 races. so it's not like he won 50 races and you're like, well, he was more talented. He just didn't get the results. I mean, he won a lot. So, yeah, to me, I put him right up there, but I just can't quite put him past Jimmy. Cause I just think this era is just so remarkably competitive. That yeah. And of course I do have recency bias, but that's why we put people who are older than me on the panel.
Everything you say is correct. I don't argue with you. I get it. And I don't begrudge anybody who voted for Jimmy. I don't begrudge anybody for David. It was interesting people hear different people voting. I'm curious your thoughts on Richard Petty. And did you ever give him any consideration? Because it never crossed my mind, to be honest with you. Like, I think Petty is great and he deserves all the acclaim. But I have some very clear thoughts on Richard and his career. And I have a really hard time seeing him as NASCAR's all-time best driver. To me, it doesn't even cross my mind.
Yeah, I mean, I had him number four. It wasn't really, I was never like, okay, am I going to put him number one? I mean, you look at the 200 wins and seven championships and, you know, and all the records he has and all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, I do sort of, I mean, it sounds disrespectful, but you sort of ding him for some of the fields he raced against, you know, to pile up those wins. And, you know, I get how mad people were a few years ago when Kyle Busch got 200 total wins and there was some of the petty comparisons floating out there. You're like, do Kyle's wins, is that the same kind of thing? But I mean, I think you could make the argument that Petty won some of his cup races against fields that were Xfinity or truck quality. No, I mean, is that wrong?
No, I mean, it's very accurate. And he was at a time when he had the absolute best equipment, the most resources. And he was one of the few guys who ran year in and year out, ran for the championship. There was a little bit of window there when he went in drag race and, you know, had some fights with NASCAR. But largely, year in and year out, he was running for the championship, running every single race just about, and other guys weren't. He was one of the very few guys running for that championship. So when you do that, your numbers are you're a compiler, right? That's what you're more. And Again, I don't want to be disrespectful, but it's hard to kind of, you kind of got to step back a little bit. And that was kind of when the Pearson argument was like, when Pearson ran for the championship, he was better than Petty more often than not. And that was why I looked at it. And like, if that's the case, then he can't be number one on my list.
I mean, look, you have races like Richard Petty's 1967 season, right? Where he wins the 27 races in a year and wins a championship. Yeah. And you're just like, wow, that's unbelievable. I mean, I wouldn't even dream to take anything away from that. But then you look at like, okay, he ran 61 races in 1964 and won the championship, right? Mm-hmm. He only won 9 of those 61 races. He had 43 top tens, and he was the one that entered the races, like you're saying, and won a bunch of them. And so he wins the championship. You know, that's one of his 7 championships. And again, I'm not discounting, like, I still feel like he's one of the top 4 drivers ever. He's the king, all that stuff. And he's been an unbelievable ambassador and legendary name for NASCAR. I just personally, you know, when you're saying who is the greatest driver ever, he's one of them. But, you know, even when you look back, like, it was interesting to do this research, you know, because you'd see, okay, well, there's times when people say, you know, you'd look at old clips or something of, oh, I think Junior Johnson is the best or something like that. You know, like there was people of that era saying, oh, Curtis Turner, what talent he had. You know, he was so talented.
Fireball Roberts, too, is a name that you hear a lot of.
Yeah. And you know, so again, obviously a lot of people felt that way about Petty, too. But it wasn't like he was the undisputed greatest in his time, necessarily. So I don't know. I mean, again, people are gonna have different opinions. There's plenty of people who voted Petty number one. Just Jordan and I's opinion is not necessarily reflective of the whole panel.
No, we're just absolutely not.
You know, two young guys. Well, relatively young. I mean, I don't have any hair anymore.
I'm young.
Okay. Aren't we a year apart?
I'm young.
Okay. So I did have Dale Sr. number 3 and you had him, number 5. So you're not as high on, you had Gordon number 4. So you're not as high on Dale Sr. Why not?
I don't know. I just look at, I think that he came at a time. I think he was the benefit. I don't say benefit. There was, it goes back to what I said earlier. I think that if some things would have played out differently, I don't know if he would have had 7 championships. And again, it's a big what if game. And you could say that about probably Petty as well. And there's probably things about Johnson, but I feel like Dale Earnhardt's career. I think again, if Tim Richmond and Davey Allison, and I'll throw Ernie Irvin in there as well. You know, those things don't happen. Those careers aren't cut short for whatever reason. I don't know if Earnhardt has 7 titles, and I don't know if we're having this conversation. And so that was something I looked at. And so it felt like, you know, Larry McReynolds said something on Sirius, a few weeks ago, and it came at a really appropriate time because we were kind of starting this list and starting to put together thoughts and everything. And he was talking about how Dale back in the day just didn't care about qualifying. Like, he just basically kind of threw out qualifying, and like, he had such a good car. He knew he could pass guys, and he wasn't afraid to push people around the racetrack. And because the competition wasn't as deep back then, right? You could get away with it, right? And then as the competition got better and better, really into the 90s, and kind of when Gordon came around, like, you couldn't do that as much. And Dale struggled to adjust. And I don't know, that just kind of resonated with me a little bit. And so that kind of factored into it a little bit. And so ultimately I looked at it and I just said, this to me, Gordon was clearly better than Earnhardt. I know you look at the 7 titles to 4, but when Gordon came in, it felt like Dale couldn't keep up. And yeah, I mean, there's age and injury and everything that Dale was dealing with, but still, it just felt like a night and day difference. And so ultimately that's why I made the decision I did. And I don't know. That's one of the, honestly, that's one of the few on here I really feel good about. I don't have issues with.
Super interesting. I mean, you know, obviously, my first race was 2004, and I never grew up watching NASCAR, so I don't even really have you know, I didn't watch Earnhardt versus Gordon. So, you know, everything is only talking to people or highlights or things I've read or, you know, documentary type stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I guess maybe part of it is the Earnhardt mystique, you know, and the whole Intimidator vibe and, you know, the highlights of seeing all the stuff he do. And you'd be like, man, and you look at his stats and the seven titles, you go, wow, that guy, something else. But I wasn't around on a consistent basis to see. So, but again, this is why we have people who were on the panel. And hopefully that balances everything out, but that's really interesting perspective. I mean, I can't ding you for that at all. I did want to bring up Tim Richmond because that was one area where you and I had, a pretty wide gap in how we viewed it. And I think that was one of the most fascinating things to me. I went down a huge rabbit hole. Once again, you know, I'd watched that Tim Richmond documentary. Was that on ESPN? Was that?
Yeah, it was an original 30 for 30.
Yeah, right. That was so good. Way back in the day. God, that was probably almost 10 years ago now or something,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah. It was more than that. It was like 10, 11, somewhere in there.
Wow. I'm old. So.
Not old.
I am.
Old.
So I had Tim Richmond number 42, and you had him number 62. I don't know. I just kind of looked at like, well, I guess what was there a reason you had him lower? Or I mean, I don't know if you can remember your thinking compared to the other people you had, but
yeah, I mean, it's he's got this like aura about him, right? Of like the great what if career, that kind of thing. And I guess it's a tragedy. He died young, and his career was cut short. His career was cut short for poor choices that he made, right? Like, let's be honest. Like, there were some people tell you. I mean, and he had one really great year in 86 with his first year with Rick Hendrick, and they were horrible the first half of that year. And then the second half of the year, they found lightning in a bottle. And that Days of Thunder scene where they go to the racetrack and they say, we're going to do Harry Hogg tells Colt Trickle, we're going to do 50 laps my way, or we're going to do 50 laps your way, right? Like, apparently that was based on real life in a comment between Tim Richmond and Harry Hyde, his crew chief at the time. And that actually happened. And Tim's driving style was so on it. Like, he just wore out his car and Harry had to kind of slow him down. And once they kind of figured out each other, they caught it and they won seven races the second half of the year. One of them was the Southern 500, which is a crown jewel event. So it felt like that year Tim was going to break out and be this next great star. And he certainly had the potential to do that. And then the next year, he got sick, doesn't run the whole season, comes back. The first two races he ran, he wins at Pocono and at Richmond. I'm sorry, at Pocono and at Riverside. And that was it. And so it just felt like, I don't know. It was a real short window. And so it was really hard to properly rate him. And what he did before he got in a Hendrick car too, he had won some races, but he wasn't like overpowering the competition. It wasn't like, oh my God, this guy's great. He was somebody who was very aggressive, who was really hard on his equipment, had a lot of DNFs. So it wasn't like a Davey Allison comparison where Davey was like really, really good consistently. And you could see this throughout. Like Tim, I don't want to say caught lightning in a bottle, but I almost feel like in some respects, maybe he did. I don't know. I'm probably talking myself in circles here.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I you know, obviously for me to put him number 42, I had to have him higher than, you know, a guy like a Ryan Newman who won 18 races, a Casey Kane who won 18 races because Tim Richmond won 13 races. But when I look at like that 1986 year, right before he gets sick and ultimately dies from AIDS, those seven wins you talked about, that was the most of anybody in the series.
Yep.
And that included the Southern 500, as you said. And, you know, the points standings that year end up being Dale Sr., Darrell Waltrip, Tim Richmond. And so you're like, well, look at who he was going up against to finish third in points. And the fact that he didn't even have a good first half of that year. I mean, those wins, I mean, I'm just like, wow, that's tough competition, a great field, great driving. I mean, to lead the series in wins anytime in the 80s, to me, that's like, wow, okay. Mm-hmm. Extra points for that rather than, you know, like, again, like Greg Biffle, 19 wins in his career, a Ricky Rudd, 23 wins, but a lot more spread out than Tim Richmond. And so, you know, I do think if somebody has any sort of, you know, ballpark numbers in a shorter amount of time, I'm going to boost that up more compared to somebody that did it over, you know, a longer stretch or had a full career and got those numbers. So, yeah, it's just interesting. I mean, but again, I don't knock you at all for how you vote on this stuff. It's just the interpretation that people have of it. And that's why, I mean, I hope this project is going to be interesting to people. And, you know, I hope people will find it. Obviously we're going to be doing it on The Athletic. If we didn't say that before, it's going to be rolling out. I think we're going to do, each Monday for the big chunks. So it'll be, I think the plan is, you know, again, January 30th for the first 25 drivers. That's tomorrow, if you're listening to this, on Sunday. And then, the day after the Clash, I think would be the next chunk. And then, I think, like maybe 25 through 20 or something like, or sorry, 25 through five would come out, the day after the Super Bowl, the Monday before the Daytona 500. And then we might do like features on the top four coming through then, or that's the plan. I don't know if we'll change that, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
I got a question for you. Here's a driver I struggled with, and this may sound weird considering he won three championships. Your thoughts on Tony Stewart, and where'd you rank him?
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Well, I mean, I think certainly Tony Stewart, you know, you could have made an argument that he had the talent to be even higher. But you know, he didn't always necessarily like, I don't know, apply himself, or
I just want to put that you said that and not me.
No, I think that's, I don't disagree with that. I mean, yeah, there was times when Tony Stewart was so extremely talented that he could essentially coast a lot, right? Like on his talent or rely on his talent and not have to necessarily put in the work that, I mean, you would see guys, I don't know if Tony Stewart, for instance, would be successful today with having to study all the film and, you know, do all the stuff that these guys do to stay, you know, in shape and all those kinds of things. I mean, Tony was just a natural, unbelievable talent. I still have him number 10 on my list. You have him number 11 on your list. I mean, I have him the highest. There's nobody above him, you know, that won fewer races than he did that I have. He won 49 races. Everybody above him for me on my list has at least 60 wins. So I have him above Kevin Harvick. You reversed him and Harvick. I have him above Harvick, who has 60 wins. You know, for me, Tony Stewart with three titles.
That's the thing. Like, he won three titles, three different formats or two different formats. And that 2011 championship run, it's like, I don't know if that should factor in how we voted or not, but man, that to me, that stretch of 10 races that he put together, winning five of them and how we did it was incredible. But I look at Tony's career and I feel like his career could have been better and it should have been better than it did. Like 49 wins to me feels light. Like he should have had a career that more than 50 wins. He should have been in the 60s, if not higher. The three championships cannot be ignored, but also cannot be ignored. He never won the Daytona 500. He never won the Southern 500. He never won the Coke 600. Three of the four crown jewels in NASCAR, he never won. Like, and that was a big factor for me and why I put Kevin Harvick ahead of him, which is Kevin has won all of those races. Yes, he's only got one championship, but I would also argue that he maybe wasn't in a position to win more titles before he got to Stewart Haas Racing, and that he, you know, if he had been with an elite caliber team like Tony had been throughout his career, I think Kevin's career maybe would have been differently. You know, we talk about championships in this era and how maybe you got to weigh them differently. And I agree with that. And so I look at the fact that Kevin, since he's been at Stewart Haas Racing, has been in the championship four a lot as a real thing. Like, he deserves credit for that. And so I put him ahead of Tony Stewart, and I wasn't even really a much of a factor or a consideration for me.
I didn't end up valuing the championship four appearances as much yet, but I think like another 10 or 15 years from now, that will be like one of the major things, like along with a crown jewel type win, or probably even more. I would probably even value those more than like a Daytona 500, for instance, in a decade from now, when it, assuming the format stays the same and it continues to be Final Four, I will definitely be looking at like, okay, well, this guy had X amount of Final Four appearances, so that helps me stack him up against other people of his era. Ultimately, Jordan, we did have the same drivers in the top 11 before we started to branch off a little bit, just in a different order. So just to close this out here, I'll go through, and if you want to make any more comments on why you put guys in certain areas. So you had David Pearson number one, Jimmy number two, Richard Petty number three, Jeff Gordon number four. You had Dale Sr. number five, as we talked about. Then you go Cale Yarborough, Darrell Waltrip, Bobby Allison, Kyle Busch, Kevin Harvick, Tony Stewart. Any reason for the Yarborough, Waltrip, Allison, or the Busch, Harvick thing, anything? Because Busch and Harvick have the same amount of wins.
Yeah, it's the Cale Yarborough, Darrell Waltrip, Bobby Allison. It's really, really hard. They're almost interchangeable. I mean, the deciding factor was Bobby Allison only had one championship, and Bobby Allison was his own worst enemy throughout his career. Like, he would go to big teams. He had opportunities to really, if he could have just not, he was so strong-minded, you know, he just wanted to do things his way, and he kept quitting great opportunities, Roger Penske, Bud Moore, and other opportunities. And he only won one championship, is what I'm saying. And if he would have stayed with these teams and figured it out, I think he would have won more championships. But ultimately, those three guys raced each other for a long time. Bobby only had one championship. I put Yarborough ahead of Walter because of the fact that Cale was the first driver to win three straight titles. And I almost feel like his career is a little bit overlooked in some respects. We hear a lot about Darrell Walter because he's Darrell Walter. You want to hear about how great Darrell Walter is, Darrell will tell you, right? Like, he was on the Fox broadcast. And like, he's just a recognizable name. And Bobby Allison is very much a recognizable name. Cale was just kind of a guy who did his thing and disappeared. And when his career was over, he owned a team for a little while, but he's not somebody that you ever see at the racetrack anymore. I haven't for a long time. And when you look at it, though, he had a really, really, really great career. And him winning three straight titles was the deciding factor why I put him ahead of Darrell and Bobby.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, I can't really argue with that. We have a similar take here, and I'll get your thoughts on the Kyle Busch Harvick thing in a minute, because I want to dive into it myself. But so mine were Jimmy Johnson, David Pearson, Dale Sr., Richard Petty, Jeff Gordon, and then I go Cale, Bobby, Darrell instead of Cale, Darrell, Bobby, as you did. So I agree with you for the reasons you put Cale there. I mean, you know, Bobby and Darrell, same amount of wins. Bobby, I believe, feels like there was one win that was taken away from him that he didn't get properly credited for, and will argue till his dying day that he should have one more win than he has, that he should be ahead of Darrell in wins. You know, it's a toss up. It's a toss up for me. I don't really know. I can't even really remember why I put one over the other. I'm sure I was looking at crown jewels or something. I don't know. And then I went Kyle Busch number nine, as you did. Then I have Tony Stewart and Harvick instead of Harvick, Tony Stewart. So we both felt Kyle Busch is number nine. And thus, even though Jimmy is, you know, coming back for the partial schedule, we feel like essentially we have voted Kyle Busch as the greatest active driver. So why did we do that?
60 career wins. You look at his numbers versus Harvick head to head. In fewer starts, Kyle's got more wins. And in this era, he has made the championship four on the regular. He does have an extra championship, another championship that Harvick does. He is very good in the majors. Yes, Kyle Busch has never won the Daytona 500. Kevin Harvick has, but he has won the Brickyard 400 multiple times. He's won the Southern 500. He's won the Coca-Cola 600. Like, he is really, really good. It's interesting is if we would have put this list together like 3 or 4 years ago, I would have had Kyle Busch where I had, you know, about where he is now. And I would have said, oh, he's got a really good chance to crack the top five all the time, right? I don't feel that's the case anymore. I feel like he could maybe climb another spot or two, but I think it's going to be really hard for him to do it. I think nine is probably about as high as he's going to get. And I kind of throw another driver in here is one of the takeaways I had from this is putting together this list was about Joey Logano. And that if we're doing this list 10 years from now, I think Joey Logano has a really, really good chance of cracking the top 10.
Yeah, so we both had Logano fairly high. Now, just to close the thought on the Kyle Busch versus Harvick thing, you know, Kyle Busch has 60 career victories. All 60 of his obviously have come while Harvick's been around. Harvick has 54 of his, but I feel like, you know, to your point of how far could Kyle move up? Okay. So he needs 23, 24 more wins to catch that, Jimmy, Kale, Bobby, Daryl cluster, right? At least on the wins list. He's not going to catch Jimmy's 7 championships, but let's say he wins, you know, 4 races a year or something. 4 or 5 races a year to close out his career. Like he has sort of a later career renaissance and returns to form from his last few years at Gibbs. And you would think if he does that, then he maybe wins another championship or two in the process. So if he ends his career with say 80-ish, low 80-ish wins and like 4 titles, I could move him above Kale, Bobby, Daryl.
Sure.
But you're right in that he's lost a lot of ground now, lost a lot of time mm-hmm. by not winning as much these last couple of years. So,
and he's no longer with a super team, and he's now with a team whose last championship, by the way, came in 1994.
Well, I mean, yeah, this is going to be the one of the great things about this season. It's going to be so interesting.
Well, I will say this. Can I just another thing on the Kyle thing? If he does go to Richard Childress Racing and kind of becomes Kyle Busch again and starts winning a bunch of races. And let's say he wins a title. I think obviously he's going to shoot up this list because he's going to win races. And then he had a 3rd championship. The fact that he carried Richard Childress, he brought Richard Childress Racing back to championship status, I think is going to be like a huge feather in his cap. And that's like something you could say, like he took this team who for, I don't know what, 25 years or whatever that, however long it's been. And he brought them out of the wilderness and they were good for a while, but he brought them back to the championship table. That's a huge thing. Like that's going to carry some weight.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just on your Logano point real quick. You know, I had voted him, as I said, let's see, I think I have him I have him number 19. I might've said 20 earlier in the show. I had him 19. You had him 22. And oddly, just by coincidence, we both had Brad Keselowski one spot ahead of him. Now, Logano has one more championship than Keselowski, but he has 4 fewer wins. Why is Keselowski better than Logano at this point?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Good question. It comes down to majors a little bit. Brad's won the Southern 500. He hasn't won the Daytona 500, but he's won the Southern 500. He's won the Brickyard 400. He's won the Coke 600. Joey's only major right now is the Daytona 500. And so that carries some weight. And maybe this doesn't mean anything, or maybe it shouldn't mean anything, but the fact that Brad Keselowski went to Team Penske and is credited and not, you know, by a lot of people of like transforming Team Penske because they were kind of lost for a while. They were inconsistent. They would be good one year, bad the another year. You know, Penske had never won a championship. They were always a team that like, you know, wait a second, why is Roger Penske's team not better than this? Right. And he went over there and kind of said, hey, we need to do X, Y, Z. Why are we not doing this? Why do we not have an Xfinity program? You should hire this guy. And he changed Team Penske to where Team Penske became what we know them now in NASCAR. And I think, I don't know if that should have factored in my decision or not, but it did. And he was also the guy too that recommended that Penske hire Joey Logano. And so he really helped Penske position themselves to be great, to be elite, to be one of the teams where year in and year out, they are competing for a title. And they weren't like that when Brad got there.
Okay, this is really fun. We could kind of do this all day, but I just want to do one more pairing here. Kyle
Larson.
You're
not going to call me an idiot or anything?
No, I mean, this is it's your opinions.
Oh, man.
Kyle Larson and Chase Elliott. Okay. I had Kyle Larson number 20. You had Kyle Larson number 34. And I had Chase Elliott number 29. And you have him number 35. So we both have Larson above Elliott, even though they both have one championship and they're only separated by one victory. But yet we have Larson higher. So why do you think that was?
What Larson did at Chip Ganassi Racing in kind of reshaping them, and his, you know, winning four races in 2017 with an organization and being kind of elite and emerging in that is much different than being at Hendrick Motorsports and doing it. And I'm giving him a lot of credit and a lot of weight for that. And then the fact that his 2021 season is an all-time season. Like,
exactly.
That's one of those seasons we're going to look. I don't even think we fully appreciate it now. I think in the moment we kind of looked at it, we're like, wow, this is really great. But I think like years down the road, you're going to be looking through this. You're like, what in the heck? He did what in 2021? And not to mention all the stuff he did outside of NASCAR, by the way. But I'm talking like 2021. He won, what, 5 playoff races, led over 2,000 laps, won double-digit races. It's like, that's an all-time season. That Chase Elliott's not had a season like that. And Chase Elliott, frankly, probably should have had a season like that, like, or something, you know, something of that nature. And he hasn't done it yet, but that is a great, great, incredible year.
Yeah. I think I gave major points for that season. I mean, he has the record for most less laps led in a 36 race schedule. The last driver other than Jimmy Johnson to get double digit wins, you know, in the last really couple decades almost. So, when you win 10 races in a year and get that record on en route to a championship, I mean, it's sort of extra credit for a championship. But yet it's just interesting. I mean, you do have those guys behind, you know, like sort of the Bobby Isaacs of the world, Tim Flock, Joe Weatherly, Rex White. I mean,
Weatherly deserves it. I mean, Weatherly was a two-time champion and his career was cut short. He, you know, won the championship at back-to-back years. And then literally the next year, early in the season, got killed in a crash at Riverside. So it's like he had a chance to be the first driver who went 3 in a row. We just don't know. It's another great what if in NASCAR history.
But you have Larson below him. I mean, Joe Weatherly was a better driver than Kyle Larson, better career.
He got two championships, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, maybe. And again, I look at it like he could have had three. I don't know. It's hard.
And one thing we differ on, and I really should cut this podcast because we could seriously go all day. So we differed on how we view Carl Edwards versus Martin Truex Jr. I had Carl Edwards. I think I had Carl Edwards highest of anybody on the panel, perhaps number 21. And I had Truex number 30. You have Truex number 27 and you have Carl Edwards number 30. So you think that, I mean, Truex had 31 wins, Carl 28. Again, Truex has a title. So that was probably, you probably factored that in. I have Carl as almost having two titles essentially. So what's your justification for Truex having a better career than Carl?
I think Martin Truex Jr.'s career has been one you look back on and be like, wow, that was really, really good. He won big races. He won a lot of races.
You have him higher than Kurt Busch, actually, by one spot.
I do. His stretch of winning the championship in 2017, he finished second 3 other times, I believe. That can't be ignored. He was in this stretch, you know, 5, 6 year, 7 year window was just really, really good year in and year out. It's like you could pencil him in to win 3, 4, 5 races, and he was great in big races. He dominated the Coke 600. He was a factor, and he did win a title. And Carl, to me, is a driver who, yes, he won big races. He won the 600. He won the Southern 500. But I go back to 2011. It's like, he should have won that championship, man. You let Tony Stewart, and like, how did you lose that championship? He had year to year, like he would win you know, like let's say like 2011, right? He only won one race that year, but he was super consistent. And then the next year, he didn't even make the playoffs. And that happened another time in his career too. It was 2005. He won three or four races that year. And then the next year gets shut out completely. Like, how do you do that? Like year to year, like he couldn't string together great dominant years back to back to back. And that's a factor for me.
Yeah, that's interesting. I just feel like he had a great career that was, you know, underrated, and who knows what could have happened. Yeah. A couple things done differently. I mean,
sure.
Obviously 1 point, first of all, he needed one more point, in the 2011, situation, and he would have won that title. And then, you know, that was over the course of 10 races. And then in the, 2016 Final Four, had that caution not come out, he's potentially looking at a two-time champion had he won the 2011 one. And then it ends up being his last race. So, I mean, yes, and you can't operate in what ifs, but I mean, he was pretty good.
Sure.
He was a championship caliber driver who won some big races and was going toe to toe with the heavyweights of his time, in a really tough era. So to me, he's up there.
But. Can I add one other thing on this too? And it's a little bit apples to oranges, but like throughout Edwards' career, he was always with big organizations. He started with Roush. He went to Roush when Roush was Roush, right? Like they were great then. They kind of tailed off a little bit, but he still was able to do things. Then he goes to Joe Gibbs Racing, which is another powerhouse. Truex's career is a little bit different. Like he comes in at DEI when DEI is falling apart and he sticks around there for a little bit. You could say that he probably should have jumped ship sooner than he did. Then he goes to Michael Waltrip Racing. That place was a mess when he got there. They got better. They finally right the ship. Looks like things are going great. Then that wheels fall off there. No fault of Truex. And it's like he didn't really get anywhere stable until he got to Furniture Row. And even that was like a last ditch thing. And that place closed up on him. So if he would have been with a great team, a stable team throughout his career, I would argue that his numbers would probably be better than Edwards. He'd be even better than Edwards.
Interesting. Well, so many more debates to come, because
I have so many questions for you about this. I could talk about this for hours.
I know. And as the first chunk gets revealed, I'm sure Twitter will have a lot of opinions and things to say. But again, hey, don't look at us necessarily. There's a lot of other people on this panel as well. who have accomplished a lot more than we have and been around a lot longer than we have.
All criticisms and complaints to them, all compliments, just send them our way.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No. Yeah. Yeah. Call up Roger Penske and take issue with his voting. Like he doesn't know what he's talking about.
We'll put his email on Twitter for you.
Yeah. Right. All right. Well, anyway, hopefully you guys will look forward to that. Again, that will be posted on The Athletic. And we'll look forward to seeing your feedback and, you know, share your list and stuff too. I mean, we by no means are saying ours is the definitive list. We tried to put together a sampling of people who might know what they're talking about, hopefully. And, but you know, you could add many more people and there'd be many more opinions probably. So, yes. Anyway, thanks for listening to this and we'll see what you guys think and we'll be talking to you 1 week from today, Jordan, at the Clash.
Look forward to seeing you in person, my friend.
All right, everybody, have a great week. We'll talk to you next time on The Terry.